The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave, Dave Dameshek. Welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available as always on iTunes, Stitcher, and nfl.com/Sheck.
S-H-E-K-S-H-E-K-S-H-E-K.
Back in Studio 66, maximum strength after a glorious Super Bowl. After a glorious Super Bowl trip, in fact, I'll tell you, 5 for 5. I've been to 5 Super Bowls now, thanks to Kamish Goodell and NFL Media. And for 4 of those, I've been with the man seated to my immediate left here. Let's say hello to him and then also to the guy behind the glass. Black tie, we had a gangbusters time as we forecasted we would. Let's break down Super Bowl 49. This is going to hurt a little bit because I would expect at least. We have some anecdotes to get through from the week that was out there. But I got to think that that was a tough one to watch for a Miami Dolphins fan all the way from London, England. Here he is, everybody. It's Handsome Hank.
He's Handsome Hank. He's Handsome Hank. He's Handsome Hank.
Hello, Handsome. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Thank you, Dave. What a wonderful week.
It was wonderful, but why are you very well indeed? Didn't your rival Patriots just win another Super Bowl?
They did, but I think we discussed this a couple of weeks before the Super Bowl. In a way, getting that off their back might help the Dolphins. Maybe they'll relax a bit. Maybe Bill Belichick and Tom Brady will be like, who cares about the 2015 season? We're champions.
You know what? I know that we're starting off with, maybe this is a bit of silliness to speculate about that, but I think perhaps so.
Yeah,
what's with Tom Brady? Now this was an albatross for him for a decade.
Right.
Now it's off. So, right. All right, that's that.
Exactly.
On the flip side, he can deflate a little bit now.
On the flip side, I'd hate to be a team in the NFC West. I'm serious.
I
think those guys are going to be, you know, if you were scared of the Seahawks before, you should be even more scared of angry Seahawks.
Well, let's just real quick, and then we will talk about the game and all the good times we had out there and try and evaluate where this one belongs in history and where the members who played key roles in it rank all time and all that kind of stuff. But real quick from the resident Pittsburgh Steelers fan, a.k.a. me, now all of a sudden now I have to dread that the Steelers are going to get the kickoff game.
And I was about to say, I'd like to make my first prediction of the 2015 season is that the Pittsburgh Steelers will face the New England Patriots on opening
Thursday. What do I want that for? That's a guaranteed loss. That's
is
not
it?
A good... Yes, you always lose that
but
game.
There's nothing better than going into the first game of the season, getting to level set yourself against the best team in the NFL.
No, thank you.
I don't know if I should remind you, but the week one of the 2014 season, the eventual Super Bowl champions lost in Miami.
I do know that, and mazel tov to you.
Thank you.
You know, here's a
all I've got.
Here's a crazy stat for you that this our pal Matt Money Smith, who we did shows Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday last week from Radio Row. You can go back and listen to some of the highlights of that. We talked to Gangbusters, a Gangbusters list of football related stars that way. But Matt Money Smith pointed out, do you know since 1980, if you play the San Diego Chargers and lose you and get to the Super Bowl, you are 0-14. Is that the craziest stat
That's
there
insane.
Is? What gives? You know, people cite the video game stuff and, you know, all that. You know, the magic of football baby, the baby who picks football games, the revelation of 2014. He picked the Seattle Seahawks, and even he came up short. And a powerful reminder to him, you know, as I pointed out to him, yeah, he was a revelation. But the old man's still where it's at. I picked
right.
What did I say? I said 30. What did I say, Black Tie? Did I say 30-24? Tom Brady is your MVP?
I do not remember.
Yeah, we'll try to remember.
Well,
hey,
why don't you pull up last Tuesday's podcast where I said 27-24 Patriots?
All right. That's
what was the final score, Black Tie? Do you remember?
I do not remember.
Did you watch the game?
I have no recollection of this game. Wiped it out of my memory.
What is Black Tie's problem?
Wait,
what's your issue here?
Well, guys.
This was a glorious football game.
It was
I'm going to say it here and now, and then I will defend it over the remainder of this show. That was the best Super Bowl of all time. The best.
Not going to argue. Definitely best I've seen. You've seen way more than I have.
I thought you just said you didn't see it.
Well,
or you
I
don't
did
remember
see
it.
I just...
It was a big Chelsea-Liverpool game on or something like that.
No, seriously. It was a fun game. It was a terrible, tough ending for a Russell Wilson fan like myself. So
it's not so you're not upset as a Seahawks fan because you've never once acknowledged being a Seahawks fan. Now suddenly you're devastated by the result.
Well,
it's
one of those things where it's like I'm not a Seahawks fan. I keep telling myself that, but it still stinks. It really does stink because this is one that sticks with you your whole career, Russell's career, that is.
Hey, Black Tie. Yeah, mm-hmm. First things first. Our week started out in Phoenix, and Handsome and I continued our culinary tour across the United States, and we really gathered some steam as the week went along.
We definitely did.
We built up to some delicious food, but Black Tie, we started the week at Media Day. 1 week ago, it's Tuesday as we record this. We were at Media Day, and it was a wonderful time. And we talked to Russell Wilson. A real highlight was Black Tie announcing we got to ask Russell Wilson about the sexy deep ball he threw in overtime to Jermaine Kearse. And I said, to what end? Why are we going to ask him about that at Media Day? He said it would be a great bit for the Sheck Report. And I said, how would it be good for the Sheck Report? And then he admitted. He's like, all right, it's just really for me. It's for me. I want to do
Sheck
it.
Was a team
so
player.
So he did it.
That's
he
all right.
He totally indulged my nonsense, and it was fun.
Most of the people at Media Day doing it for themselves. So I wouldn't mind. Like the guy with the hand puppets or the guy dressed as whatever – where do you ever see those media reports, apart from on Media Day with the photos of other media going, look at this clown? Like, what do they do with that content?
Well, that's the best thing.
Nothing.
The best thing about that stuff is like we talked about before we went, is it's the split, the two ends of the spectrum. You have all those clowns, people wearing superhero outfits and people nude in barrels and whatever else. And then the other half of the people there are just put out by it. Why must I be here? I'm a serious-minded journalist, and I have to deal with all these clowns. So I go there and ask stupid questions. And once again, it went well because I think that it's distinctive. We're not complete. We're not being Gallagher comedians.
You're not clowns. You're not dressed as a superhero.
And then I'm not asking them about, how do you prepare for a game like this, right. How do you look back and break down? Who cares?
But you were outraged by Marshawn Lynch not answering any questions, I presume.
No, I wasn't. What do I care at this point? What do people expect to have happen?
Right.
How many times do you have to see him do that before you stop being offended personally by his decision not to answer to your special question, narcissist? But people have asked me, and so now I will tell you now. The questions I would have asked if I were in the locker room on Sunday night, I would have asked the Patriots if this is one they could build on, if this victory is one they could build on,
mm-hmm.
and because people like asking that after a victory. And then after a loss, I would have said, any chance you were overlooking this one and looking ahead to the Rams next year? Just to see. But then I might have gotten socked.
Yeah, I think
that would have been a good end of the weekend. But, of course, it was a great Saturday night. At NFL Honors, a formal affair, all the pigskin glitterati out there and their lovely significant others, including, by the way, Brian Rolapp, I saw. He's one of the bigwigs of the NFL. He came up to me and he said, hey, Dave, football baby, big hit in our house.
Really?
That's right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you say bigger hit in my house?
That's why, I said, big hit everywhere. But, so that was fun. So out there, we talked to him. Black Tie and I were out there, and it was really good. Black Tie did a gangbusters job. David Singer, the talent guy, and everybody else hustling around to get all these people, getting their attention to sit down with us. And we talked to Black Tie. It was an array of stars. It was a rainbow of the biggest stars. We talked to Lev Bell, Antonio Brown, which, of course, made me swoon.
J.J. Watt.
J.J. Watt. What a man he is.
Wow, what a guy.
He's the best guy there is.
Yeah.
I mean, best guy and, man of the year and all this stuff, and in a dark year for the NFL in some ways. J.J. Watt, man, it makes me choked up that guy goes – I mean, charity is always good, but – he goes to children's wards in the Houston hospital with desperately ill kids and boosts their spirits. It's just too much. I couldn't do it. I think I would just be they'd be could you
You're
leave
tears,
your weeping isn't
weeping
isn't helping
isn't helping
anything,
anyone.
Dave. Yeah,
I agree.
He's great. We talked to Megatron.
Calvin Johnson, favorite player.
Who?
Calvin.
Your favorite player?
Yes. What?
What would you? What are you? You're
over
here.
Russell Wilson.
You guys know anything about me?
Yes.
You guys know anything about me?
Why are you crying about the Russell Wilson?
Well, he's my favorite quarterback. There's a difference.
What are you? 11 years old?
I'm saying.
He's my favorite.
Who's on your duvet this week?
Let's move on, guys. We also spoke to DeMarcus Ware. We spoke to Justin Houston, Aaron Donald.
Guys. You've listed 15 players until you got to Ryan Tannehill. You spent 15 other names.
He was great.
You said Todd Bowles before Todd Bowles. Ryan.
Well, that was Mike Evans. It was fun. He might be a good recurring guest.
I forgot about
it was really
Mike
good
Evans.
Fun.
He was super fun. Bruce Arians was the
man.
We'll have all that stuff for you. We'll show you video of our conversation.
That's going to be part of our NFL.com off-season stuff.
We talked about some really important matters.
So I would say this about Ryan Tannehill, though. I did bring you up Hank, and he had no idea who you were.
Wait a second.
Which is surprising, because I saw a photo of you guys like the day before. I thought he was going to be like, oh, Hank and Henry, all that stuff. He was like, oh, who's that guy?
No, we did Dave. Dave kindly brought me into a conversation with Ryan Tannehill that was, you know, we worked through a lot of different stuff. And then I kept bumping into him and his beautiful wife in our hotel. They were staying in the same hotel. Every time I opened the elevator doors, they'd either be on inside or the outside of the elevator.
Did you mention anything about, like, Mike Wallace?
I didn't, but I just said, you know, keep doing what you're doing, keep focusing, and work hard in the off season.
All right, we're getting to the Super Bowl, but
Let's do one more thing.
Probably
Le'Veon Bell. I did say to Le'Veon Bell off camera, I asked him about the knee, and he said, I just started running this week, and it really felt good to finally be able to run. And I said, what are you talking about? Just starting to run? Then what was this hokum about that you would have played in the divisional round? He said, I know. I don't know. I might have given it a go, though. I might really have tried it. And I said, I'm glad then that you didn't. Because if you just now started running, then that sounds like you might
have
really...
You probably shouldn't have been running in mid-January.
Yeah, you might have really injured it worse and just as well. Let's just stay nice and fresh for 2015 and beyond that in the black and gold. All right. But our culinary tour was great, wasn't it?
It was.
We ate with Let's give our final rankings.
Okay, well, how many times did
before
we eat
the
together?
We ate together 3 times.
No, I think it was more than that.
Did we?
I think we went to a place called Angels and Trumpets.
Delicious.
Was great. More bar food type of thing.
But delicious. Pomo Pizza. Naples.
Neapolitan.
Yeah. Is that what it is?
Pizza. It was delicious. Like the real deal. Italian. I wish you'd
it was
there,
the
you
best.
That's what
have,
that's what have blown
Way to invite
mind.
Me, guys.
That was number one. That's my gets my number
that
one.
That gets
vote.
My number one. And then we went to a terrific steakhouse. Dave turned up. I think we started eating. We were supposed to be there. We had a table booked eventually when Dave finally managed to work out how to use a computer.
I screwed it up, but whose fault is it to trust me to make plans? That's not a good idea.
Yes.
Tried right. me to have me take
you're
care right. of crossing teeth.
That's why no
and
one, that's why no one trusts you.
Right. Well,
we were
should.
Supposed to eat there at 9 p.m. At 11 p.m., Dave showed up because he was a little late, as usual, and we had some delicious steak.
I did show up late. All right, we'll move on.
Dave ate cheesecake. Can I tell one story?
Please.
But Black Tie's looking at me like that, but I think you'll enjoy this, Black Tie. So Dave, the night before, this was Friday night, Dave arrives at 11 o'clock, we eat steak. I normally would like not to eat steak in the middle of the night, but anyway, we ate steak late, and then Dave's like, I'm going to get a cheesecake. So he orders a cheesecake. No one else needs dessert, but Dave orders a cheesecake.
It was good. I had a taste for it.
Less than 24 hours later.
I also had a couple of cafes.
You had a couple of cafes.
A couple
fine.
Of
we were
wines.
The last people. We were the last people in the restaurant. Less than 24 hours later, Karma, I believe they call it, came to pay a visit to Dave because Dave was on the red carpet, as you know, Black Tie at NFL Honors.
Story.
He was interviewing all kind of the great and good. He just listed all the players. And Dave leans over to pick something up off the floor, and his pants rip up
10 inches.
From 10 inches.
The butt seam.
In the butt seam. All because of the steak and cheesecake.
I don't know if it's all because of that. So
well, no,
like
I'm sure that added to it. I should think some of the booze.
I call it a
wake-up
call. That's what it is.
Well,
so what?
Player. What's that? What's up with that?
Maybe I'm carrying a few too many. That's all.
A few.
All right, so. Yeah, my pants split on the red carpet with all the all these people there, and it was humiliating. But what was I going to do? I just slinked out of there, made my way back to the hotel. See, that's what,
and then went and ate pizza.
It's great. It's great. See, if that's the beauty of being anonymous. What if I were more famous, then people would be like, "Hey, is that Dave Damashek walking down the street with his pants split?" As it was, they're just like, "Who's that potbelly boob?" You know, look at him. He has a big hole in his bum.
That's right. We ate with Gil Brandt as well. I knew there was another occasion.
Oh, that's right. That was good too. Yeah, he and I traded NFL stories.
Yeah,
I absolutely love that. We took 2 days before we get before the podcast, and a good like 20 minutes before we get to the game. Our listeners are loving
this
right
now. Hey, I wanted to do a playing cast. You're the one who turned down.
They watched the game, and we're going to talk about the game now. But they want to hear some exciting other stories.
Should we talk about the fact that the Seahawks should have gone for it on the half yard line? Is that what you want to hear?
Let's dig in on that.
We haven't heard enough about that.
Let's dig in on that.
I actually have not. I have not watched any like post game.
Oh, I forgot. You're so traumatized. I know how destroyed you were by watching your favorite number three. I'm sorry, your favorite quarterback, not to be confused with your favorite player. But all right, let's talk about it then, Handsome. And it was a great day. The roof was open. I didn't anticipate that. A great stadium, I thought.
I love it.
I'd never been there.
It looks kind of like a gigantic spaceship has landed in the desert.
You know what? I give credit to Chris Berman on that one. I think he calls it the toaster. And it does look like a toaster.
It does look a bit like a toaster.
But yeah, it was really nice. It was a beautiful day. It was
It turned into a beautiful day. In the morning, it was very misty, foggy.
I never know
the difference between those two, but it was one or the other. It was difficult to see. And then suddenly we got into the stadium where we were sitting in a press box right at the top. I was working away. This was, 4 or 5 hours before kickoff, and suddenly the light came through. It was like, our Lord had arrived to look at the game, and of course then blessed it.
I was having lunch with Goodell at that.
Oh, okay.
See, that was
good one.
And then all the fanfare, everything else. And I've been cynical about Super Bowls in the past, certainly compared to title games. If you're a fan, if you're a diehard of a team, I encourage you, if you're within the sound of my voice, spend your money to get to that game, to go to the title game, to see your team's coronation as conference champion, or at least take the gamble that they will emerge victorious in that game over the Super Bowl. I find it more satisfying. I've done both.
I agree, but on this occasion, it seems like Seahawks fans, cause I was surprised that, my estimation was there were probably 4 Seahawks fans to every Patriots fan.
Yeah,
and actually, that was a guess before the game, and it was borne out because when it came to the end, and obviously, if you're a Seahawks fan, I'm guessing you're probably not sticking around to watch the Patriots be coronated and
that
get
would
the
be
trophy
weird.
And everything. And then when it got to that point, it really was less than a quarter full.
You know, though, I think for about 48 hours prior, I was saying the same thing. It was 4-1, maybe 5-1.
Yeah.
It was much, it was a much louder group at least. With the Seattle fans, but by the time I got into the stadium, it was much closer than I anticipated. It was almost 60-40, 70-30. It wasn't that decisively in favor of Seattle.
It's,
I didn't
think. It seemed like it to me, but it was the loudest Super Bowl I've ever been to.
It was an electric atmosphere from the word go.
Right.
It was standing the entire game.
Yep.
I don't recall having to stand throughout the other Super Bowls.
It was that way from the pregame. Like, Tom Brady comes out the tunnel. He pops up on the Jumbotron, and Tom Brady yells out and puts his hands up, and it's an epic moment. I'm not the biggest Brady fan, but that was great.
I'm not an American, but it seemed very un-American that midway through the national anthem, which is beautiful, always a great occasion, they show Belichick on the stadium Jumbotron, and obviously, whatever it was, the 70% of Seahawks fans couldn't help, despite the fact we're midway through celebrating America, booing the hell out of Bill Belichick in the middle of the national
anthem.
What's
more American than that? Free speech. We're allowed to say what we want. It's not people always can confuse the whole take your hat off for the national anthem. I want to be respectful, and so I do it. Because I feel that the vast majority of people feel like it's the right thing to do. But let's not confuse everything, anybody. Confuse it. This is not some religious service. It's the national anthem. It's a song about the country. It's not you don't have to – you're not being disrespectful,
right.
I don't think. But anyway, that's – who cares what I think about that. And so I always will remove my hat for such things. But anyway, the game kicks off. Electricity permeates the joint even though the roof is open. And from the word go, it was a delightful game, reminiscent, I thought, early of the NFC title game where the Packers were having their way and yet couldn't convert it into points. Same thing, Aaron Rodgers, a bad pick early in the game. Tom Brady's interception. I mean, that's about as bad a ball as
I'm not sure what he was intending to do there. It didn't seem like there was a receiver anywhere near.
At that point, and that's really, to me, the story of this game and why I say it's the greatest Super Bowl of all time, is the ebb and flow of it. Because right out of the gate, Brady takes him down the field, and you think, this is interesting. And then he throws that pick, and the reason he does it is because he has heat coming at him. It's in his face.
Right.
But there's just nothing there. It's not just merely the overthrow. If that ball clears Jeremy Lane.
He had Edelman in the back of the end zone.
No, he didn't have him open though.
It wasn't open. Definitely.
Yeah, that's what I'm
it saying. It was telegraphed because that was the side of the stadium I was seating on, and it was like, why is he throwing it there? There's no one there but Seahawks players.
Right. So then a key play is though that Jeremy Lane with a excruciatingly awful. I didn't see it. I saw the photos after the fact. I didn't know how grim that was. But so he picks it off. So now my head is immediately thinking. Well, if that's the story of the game, because if the Seahawks are able to get that kind of jump against a mediocre, probably mediocre offensive line, then they're doomed and they're going to lose this game. Then the Patriots proceed to start just pretty much dominating statistically and in time of possession specifically.
Yep.
They were really kind of having their way there. But then you're also watching the whole time. You're thinking – They're you know, nickel and diming them, and that's what Brady's going to do to negate the pass rush.
Right, but until the fourth quarter, he didn't have anyone open downfield. I think there was the touchdown to Gronk was about the longest pass he attempted. Everything was 3, 5, 7 yard passes, and they didn't seem like they were even willing to or able to challenge them anywhere down the field.
Did you think though that as you're watching in the early going, it was fascinating because the Patriots again they were controlling the ball. But there was also a sense for me that they wanted to try Richard Sherman. It certainly mm-hmm. looked like the first option on a few plays. They were splitting yep. out Brandon LaFell or a couple of other guys to try and test Sherman specifically, and that was the first option on the play. But the pressure was too much, and they had to abandon. Right. I think that was consistently happening. And I thought that was eventually going to cost the Patriots. But then they get the lead, and you think, can they get the ball? Because it suddenly felt like if they get up 10, if the Patriots get up 10, what's Seattle going to do? Right. They're not going to be able to throw it. They're not going to throw it on Revis and company.
But the one thing that was very apparent was that even throughout the game and even on that final series, Russell Wilson had a long time to throw the ball. Every time he dropped back, he never really – I mean, I think he was maybe sacked once or twice, but he never really looked under pressure. He wasn't being hurried.
What does that tell you? They got to get a playmaker in the passing
game. Because
with
Revis, if Revis stays in free agency, and let's assume that is going to happen – Jamie Collins, people have talked about a lot, but I don't think he's really someone that opposing teams, at least at this point in his career, are that worried about. They need someone who can get consistent pressure.
I was talking about the Seahawks. Jamie Collins, did I name him as the X factor defensively? Yes, I did, Black Tie. I told you that it's the people who think Vince Wilfork was the key to stopping the run. The pick and roll that the Seahawks run at you requires that the edge defender make the key determination, and he ended up leading the team in tackles and really kind of took that option away from him. But no, I'm saying the other way.
The Seahawks definitely.
What they did was smartly, and it takes a tremendous amount of discipline to do it. They rarely got burned by Russell Wilson running away from them, and that's what you give up. You give up the pass rush in favor of containing him. You hold him within that semicircle there. So
he did have that one big run though. I think that was just before halftime.
So then the back and forth of that, Gronk gets his touchdown, then you think, well, interesting, and while they reestablish before the half, this is good. So it's 14-7. Seattle's going to get the ball. Wow, we're battle joined. This is going to be great. Can't wait for the other side of halftime here. And instead, in 30 seconds, and by the way, here's big point number one is for anybody who is beating up on Carroll and Bevel for the bad play call at the end of the game, you also must give them credit for a couple of really ballsy calls and just great play designs. First of which is the run by Ryan Turbin at the half. They were set up. They were going to run it out. It's 31 seconds. They'll take a knee. That's what they did in a similar spot against the Packers. But they say, let's run it once here. And if you notice the play design, they split. They stacked two receivers on both sides as far out as they possibly could.
Right.
It looked like, what are they doing here? Are they going to try a Hail Mary? What are they going to do here? And instead, they give it up the middle because it's entirely vacated. And if you watch it, Turbin almost breaks. I mean, the last defender gets him or else he's gone.
Right.
They do that a couple of times. Bucky Brooks says that's like the Oregon playbook where they split him out wide. So if they want to read option, they have so much space on the perimeter. So that's
So that then informs their decision to keep going. Then Russell Wilson makes whatever that was, a 25, 30-yard run. And suddenly, in the blink of an eye, you think, they're going to get 3 points out of this. How did this happen? How dispiriting to the Patriots is this to have happen to you? Then they call the timeout, and what they're going for it with 6 seconds? They're going to give up the field goal and maybe not. Then they get it. I mean, that's – listen, Seahawks.
That was a great play. That touched it. That design was –
Seahawks fans or anyone else, you can say what you want about Bevel and Carroll, and it is interesting. Listen, I get raw emotions about Tomlin and my guys too, Todd Haley and everything else over the course of the season. But, you know, rein it in there, Seahawks fans, about the doom and gloom about Bevel has to go and all this kind of stuff. That takes guts. So then going to the locker room, suddenly now I think, well, this is the Seahawks game now. If they do anything when they get that ball at the halftime. I just went outside. Well, I really did. I didn't care about it. I went and enjoyed the setting sun.
I thought it was extraordinary.
Really?
Yeah, normally, what I'm doing during the game is, you know, it's busy. I took a peek, and then the next thing I knew, I'd been watching for 15 minutes because
really?
It's just so weird. It was just so weird. I mean, and the I guess if you've never been to a Super Bowl, what you don't really understand, or maybe you do, is that the Super Bowl halftime show, more than anything, more than football itself, is designed for TV. It's not designed for the people in the stadium. It's, you know, it's fun to be there, but everything. I mean, I actually rewatched it last night, and most of the game, but specifically the halftime show as well with my wife, and it was just like, holy whatever. There's some weird stuff going on here. And it was weird enough when you're in the stadium, but
I had no idea. I was seeing on Twitter on my phone talk about Left Shark, and I kept reading.
Well, the Left Shark thing's funny.
I had no idea what they were talking about, and so that was, you know. So I didn't realize until the next morning what you enjoyed it, Black Tie.
It was impressive set design.
It was a little bit
weird. She was essentially just Missy Elliott's hype man for like 2 minutes, though, because she brings on Missy, and all she does is just stay on stage with her, hype Missy's performance up. It was kind of strange.
Do you find Katy Perry foxy, Black Tie?
I mean, more than not, yeah.
More than not.
More than not. So anyway, so I returned in time for the second half kickoff, and Katy Perry's not on TV for me. That's you know, the thing like that I have to sit there and watch it. She's not there to entertain me. She's there to engage casual fans.
Yeah, she's not. That's fine.
By the way,
Gil Brandt didn't spend much time looking at it either. And I think of you guys, you're roughly the same age. And
definitely in terms of pop culture.
In terms of pop culture, definitely. And also in terms of football knowledge. You
know, well, so I get back in there. And so the TV rating. So I heard 114 million watched it, or is it 140 million?
I don't know the exact number. I can find it for you.
Well, I don't care. It's not important.
It was the most watched Super Bowl
most watched
of all time, which
broadcast
thing.
Ever.
Not Super Bowl.
Means
most watched
broadcast.
Well,
ever.
I know. That's because the second thing is also a Super Bowl. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm just telling you.
Yeah. True. But really, everybody points that out in sort of a glass half full thing. Like, can you believe how great? My reaction is, what are the other people doing? What are you? That's more than half the country. What were you doing with yourself?
Right.
Who do you know that didn't watch the Super Bowl outside of babies? I mean, football baby was intently watching his pick, rooting for it, but I assume other infants don't care.
Well, the good news is, if you didn't know it was on and you missed it, you can watch it again on NFL Network tonight, Tuesday night, or Wednesday, or Thursday probably as well. Like, we're repeating it, including Katy Perry. So you got to see the whole thing. No. I don't know what's going to be better on TV this week than watching the Super Bowl.
I guarantee you I'm going to watch it. The only bad thing about it was, the worst thing about it, I don't know the only bad thing, but the worst thing about it, beyond question, such a spectacle, one that you want to look back on tonight, in a year, in a decade, in 50 years.
Right.
Those terrible uniforms. That was maybe the worst uniform matchup in Super Bowl history.
Really?
So much navy. It was so dark looking. Ugh. If they would have worn their old uniforms, the two teams, if they would have worn the whites, if the Patriots had come out either in their all whites or the white hat, shirt, and red pants against the Hawks in that royal blue and the silver they used to wear, boy, that would have been. Now that's something I would watch. I would watch every night for.
I think last year's was worse. Was worse than this year.
No. I mean, it wasn't a great one, but it was better. I mean, that was a lot of Navy too. That was a bad one for that one too. But no, the Navy pants on both of them, the monochromatic. No monochromatic team has ever won a Super Bowl, but I only think there have been two or three of them. Do you know the white jerseys though have won? I think 9 out of the last 10. That might be. I should really know that as a uniform kind of.
You probably should.
The only one that didn't win in their white jerseys was the Pittsburgh Steelers against the Green Bay Packers. So anyway, the third period starts 7. They put 7 right on the board, and you think, "Wow, this is only going to get worse." Right. Marshawn Lynch is going to bang more and more and more on it.
And as you were saying just before we got into our halftime discussion, that touchdown just stole the momentum completely. The Seahawks touchdown before halftime, suddenly, you know, where you were saying things were going the Patriots' way, all of a sudden you sort of felt a shift at going into halftime, and we're like, "Well, maybe halftime sort of blocks that, whatever." But then all of a sudden in the third quarter, things just
right. In fact, I misspeak there because I remember saying to my pal Feeney, who was there, diehard Patriots fan, you got to hold them to 3 here because they, in the blink of an eye, were down there, and that Chris Matthews is making great catches.
So it was a field goal, then a touchdown, correct?
Right. Yes. First the 3, and that Chris, and you know, it's awesome. And I'll make a larger point after that, but in a minute, but the Chris Matthews thing is awesome. The Malcolm Butler thing is awesome. These guys that come out of nowhere on the biggest stage, it's remarkable stuff. And you harken back to Super Bowl 23, was it, with Doug Williams and Timmy Smith. And I can't even think of the name of the wide receiver, Ricky Sanders for the.
He wasn't that out of nowhere.
neither was Doug. But I mean, on the big stage, yeah, these all time performances. And these two guys doing it was fantastic. And again, you had to be screaming. If the Patriots, who is this guy devastating us?
Well, I really liked Chris Matthews when he was at Saskatchewan.
when he was in the CFL. Yeah.
I mean, I when I saw him play there, I was like, that's a guy who I think really could perform on the big stage.
I don't understand why the CFL doesn't change its rules to American rules. Don't they see how much more popular the sport would be? And I thought, we had our rules before you had your rules. I don't care. Our version has won. That's the bottom line.
You think a 20-yard end zone isn't.
Wouldn't it be way better if you're from the CFL? Here's how you get to be relevant. Here's my multi-stepped approach. Change your rules to American rules. Actually, that's the only step that there is. People will start watching it magically if you do that. It'll turn into the NFL's minor leagues. Anyhow, so they get it to the 3-point lead. Then Brady throws that pick, and I've heard some cynics say, "Well, that." You know, that would have been his legacy, you know, those two terrible picks. But I don't think that
wasn't a terrible pick.
That wasn't a terrible pick.
No,
that was
I mean, people
play.
Don't know
it was
what
a great play
about.
By Wagner.
Bobby Wagner made a dynamite.
I mean, I guess if there's anything you want to blame Brady for is that he, again, and Black Tie was right about him telegraphing that first interception, but he locked on Gronkowski pretty early on that play. He was like, this ball's going to Gronk, which is not surprising because he wasn't able to do anything much further downfield with any of the receivers.
It is a telling, and you know, it's a conversation that will certainly extend into 2015. But you know, Tom Brady, for all of his great deeds, and Peyton Manning and Drew Brees I thought it was a striking difference when you see room, there's plenty of green in front of Brady on several occasions. You just realize, oh yeah, he can't take off with it. There's just nothing he must defeat you with his arm or period. Not that we didn't know that already, but it is when you watch the Patriots defense, which is good, not be able to really kind of have to play toothless against Russell Wilson for fear that he's going to devastate you with a long run. It's hard to make a case against that you want a guy who can do that, you know, at this point. But anyway, so then the touchdown, so the turnover, then they go down the field, and the only ball that Darrell Revis catches, Darrell Revis allows to be caught, is by Doug Baldwin, and of course the referee assists with that one, or the official, he runs into him on that one, does Revis. Baldwin scores. Now, I'm seeing this live, and I'm close to that end zone. I'm fairly close to that end zone. He blatantly, Doug Baldwin, poops the football.
He pretended to poop the football.
Well, he puts the ball on the ground and squats over it as though he poops it. Now, shout out to Adam Carolla, who a decade ago at least has been talking about that's what he would love to do. He shot it. It's been a bit, you know, on the Man Show way back when and all that kind of stuff. And then Doug Baldwin does this, and I tweet out immediately, I can't believe that just happened in the Super Bowl, the internet's about to break. And I keep looking and looking on the internet waiting for this this tidal wave, and it never comes. And so I keep looking, and I realize, oh, the TV didn't show it. Did you guys, were you aware of it in the stadium?
Totally was, yeah. Spotted it. They didn't even put it on a Jumbotron. When they showed replays, they cut it out beforehand.
Did you see it, Hanson?
I didn't see it.
Did you know what, right were you seeing my tweets at the time?
No, I was working.
Well, that's work. I'm a relevant football voice.
Looking at your tweets.
Don't you know who I am?
When the Seahawks score in the touchdown, I have there like 19 other things. Then I'm like, now I need to look at Dave's tweets.
But all right,
but also,
did no one else pointed it out to you? Were you aware?
Oh,
that
I knew. I saw tweets about it. I didn't see yours. I'm sorry, but I also saw tweets saying that it was cut out of NBC's broadcast.
It was great, and it hasn't been addressed. I mean, I can't believe that the league hasn't. I'm assuming somebody's gonna do.
They got a penalty for it.
They did get a penalty for it, and that was actually unexplained. It was never really.
Yeah, you didn't know what it was.
Was it on sportsmanlike or excessive celebration? I think that's what I heard.
One or the other, yeah.
I mean, listen, it's hysterical, and again, I'm all for it. I thought the more offensive thing.
Did he wipe?
Oh, hands.
I don't think he
did.
What? Scatological.
No, he didn't do anything like that. But I did immediately say, oh, my God, but people around me were unclear what happened. It was very strange. Right. So anyway.
I believe that's the same point too. Richard Sherman's taunting.
So what is Richard Sherman doing there? That was not a good look.
Because Baldwin's being guarded by Darrell Revis on that play.
I know, but that's not a good look for Richard Sherman. What's he doing?
Well, that's what Richard Sherman always does, though. Are you surprised at this point?
I support. People think I don't like Marshawn Lynch not talking to the media because I've said, people say, oh, you don't like Richard Sherman. Why are you such a hater? Because I would like him to be funny. That's all. I'm all for giving it to the guys. I think that's great. Like I always say, little WWF in pro football ain't a bad thing. I just wish it were funnier. That's all. I just personally doesn't make me giggle.
Yeah, he's not a funny guy. He kind of
is really.
It's feels
well because
spiteful.
People compare him
spiteful right. or whatever.
Right. Right. People compare him to Muhammad Ali.
Well, that's their fault.
That's ridiculous. That's a ridiculous comparison. He's not nearly as funny as Muhammad Ali, which isn't.
He's not funny at all. I don't think he aims to be funny. I think legitimately he just, in a competitive mode.
Oh, I disagree. I think if you ask Richard Sherman and his teammates, is Richard Sherman funny, they think it's a gas. I think he's just a trash talker.
There's nothing about the Crabtree interview from last, post-game interview from last season, and even this has come off as funny.
Right. But they think it's a funny bit when he brings out the life-size cardboard cutout of Doug Baldwin. Oh, how funny that. Really? Is that how low our comedy standards have gotten? Go back and watch Ali, kids. That's funny. Chaz Barkley, that's funny. This is just trash talk, that's all. Fine, but I'm all for it, is my point. I just didn't get why you do that to Darrell Revis in the middle of the game when he hasn't done anything. And by the way, the reason I wouldn't be doing it is because there's 20 minutes left in this game and there's still plenty of time for you to get shamed yourself here. You sure you want to bring that on you? Do that after the game. So then I think, and now I'm thinking, and then the Patriots can't get anything going. And in the midst of all this, I'm thinking in the third quarter, I say, this is such a great game. This is such a fascinating event, and the electricity hasn't died and everything else. And I guarantee you the Seahawks.
Was that a New Orleans reference?
What was that?
The electricity hasn't died.
Come on, Shaq.
I'm sorry. I don't listen to myself talk. Yeah. I just blather.
It's all right.
And I'm thinking in the midst of all this is great. The Seahawks are surely having a good time. This is a great event. There's one guy who I can't be enjoying this, and it's Tom Brady.
Of course.
This is it. This is the one. He's back in the Super Bowl. He's been 10 years without winning one. All those questions, he cares. He cares so much about football. He talks about how much he cares about football, the guys, the organization, Mr. Kraft, Bill Belichick, you know, all the – he cares about how he's considered. They all care. The idea they don't care, that's for you guys to talk about. Yeah, and for you to think about too and to wear for the rest of your life.
And
but you don't care about it.
And you're thinking it in that moment, and everyone in the stadium is thinking it in that moment, and probably his teammates are thinking it, and definitely most people who are watching the game are thinking it. He's definitely there going – this can't happen like this.
Is this going to happen? I'm going to lose this Super Bowl.
And I threw a pick just now.
I won my first three. I'm going to lose my last three.
This was the best part of the game for me, by the way. It was great at this point.
I believe me, some of my Steelers fans, some of my lifelong friends are reaching out to me you know, on Twitter and stuff and saying, what's wrong with you? Why are you, what do you mean you feel, but you know, you have feelings
lost
about Tom Brady.
That's why when you say at the beginning of this show, do you, you know, as a Dolphins fan, I wanted Tom Brady. I don't, this sounds crazy, but I wanted Tom Brady to win a game. I didn't hate the Patriots. I hate Patriots fans, but does Tom Brady,
I was at the AFC title game in '01. I was at the AFC title game in '04, both. I mean, those rank for me in the top four or five most painful losses I've ever had as a sports fan. You know, so David Vollick for the Islanders beating the Penguins in Game 7 overtime was a killer.
He's gonna
Francisco
that.
Cabrera in Game 7, bottom of the ninth against the Pirates in '92. And a couple others. And I mean, that those Patriots losses were crushing for me. And then the stink of Spygate and, you know, all this Deflategate. What's to like about? I don't want the Belichick dour fella and all that. What, I like those people? I want to see this city. I want to see Bill Simmons brag to me. I have to listen to him about how his city is the city of champions now. Fair. I don't want to hear any of it. And yet I like that Tom Brady, you know? And it's not just because he's a handsome devil. He's likable.
He is.
No, he's not. Stop. That's
right. He's very likable. I like him a great deal.
The only thing he did likable again was his pregame hoorah. That's it.
I'll tell you something else he did.
He has everything in the world. Like
I'll tell you what else he did.
He's likable with it. But that's the mastery he has, is he's got the model wife and the, you know, the house and the money and the whatever.
Loathsome,
he should be loathsome. We should hate him, but somehow you're like,
that's for you guys.
But then you know what he did? You know what he – well, that's all he did? That's the only likable thing he
did? No, that's all he did, yeah.
Let me tell you what he did. He goes into the fourth quarter, down 10.
Well, wait, no. Before he gets to the fourth quarter, we got to talk about the big play in the third that would have sealed the game for the Seahawks. The Jermaine Kearse deep bomb on third and six or whatever it was. It was a tough catch to make, but he had done the hard part already. All he has to do is corral that ball in, and we're talking about something totally different right now. That was a big misplay.
All right. Well, that doesn't mean they get six. Doesn't mean that they get six.
Well, they get at least three. They're in field goal range, right?
All right. Well, then if the rest of the game plays out as it had, then it would have been the Patriots would have
won. No, and my man Z Drizzle was back here says that would totally just, you know, deflated the pass, no pun intended. But, like, seriously, they were in field goal range. Like, that would have been it.
I mean, listen, they're, you know, drop – but, you know – it's an interesting thing, too, that I did hear Trent Dilfer, who's always great. Trent Dilfer is
love Trent Dilfer.
I think he's terrific. His Dilfer dimes. Dilfer's, I think that's
dimes.
A fun bit.
Dilfer's and, rainbows.
But yeah. I think his analysis is he doesn't pull punches. I think he says some really interesting things, and he doesn't – it's not like, oh, I can't say stuff because that's my buddy or anything like that.
And the worst thing is people who are like, who's Trent Dilfer to tell me that? Trent Dilfer was never great. It's like – great. Well, you know, how good was Joe Montana on TV?
Yeah,
we don't
exactly.
want to listen to him.
Right.
Trent Dilfer's a good analyst.
Let's line him up. Emmitt Smith. Right. Let's put the alt.
Exactly.
Jerry Rice.
It's the all-time group. So they. Fine. Trent Dilfer pointed out wisely that, you know, if you want to make a thing about the Deflategate, and that's really not the heart of the story, it's the notion of potentially cheating or not. But Dilfer said, for what it's worth, shouldn't we have seen Brady be less accurate? Shouldn't the receivers have dropped some passes or fumbled some their victories were predicated upon this season? And, of course, they were just about pristine. Think about it. Did the Patriots drop a single pass that hit them in the hands? Did they?
I mean, they're all short passes.
All right, that's fine. But, I mean, hey, you know who was dynamite in this game? Rob Gronkowski.
Speaking of, though.
Gronk was terrific in the game throughout.
His touchdown? Come on. The Seahawks defense, what were they doing there? He split out wide, and they had a linebacker on him with no safety coverage. Of course that's where Tom Brady is going to go to. We called it out before the play happened. Like, I don't – if you're going to lose doing what you do.
They're trying to create a mismatch, and they got one.
The Seahawks to realize, hey, we have Gronk spit out as a wide receiver, and we have a linebacker on him with no safety.
Boy, you love the Seahawks. Boy, you can't it. You love them. They go to the fourth period. They're down 10, are the Patriots. I'm not a fan of theirs. Believe me, I'm sick of it. I have no winners here. Either the Seahawks get their second straight, and then they join a more exclusive group than the one that they're already in, which is Super Bowl champion. Now if you get two in a row, now they're in this different part, this
the
higher
dynasty
plateau
world that we live in.
I have to start answering that. How does this team compare with that?
That's on you.
Well, that's
you don't have to.
I'm a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. What do you mean? I have to. Don't you think I, whether I want to talk about it or not, of course people ask me, oh, where, how does this team compare with your team?
I'm aside from that a little bit because my team had a perfect dynasty season. So, you know, it's a little bit like,
and yet nobody,
there's the Dolphins.
And yet when people start talking about who the great teams are, the Miami Dolphins are somehow left out of that. I wonder why that is. Bob Greasy.
To those people.
Your QB was Bob Greasy, please. Now, listen.
Still managed to pull off a – we don't need to get into that.
I'm not going to get into
it. No, good. Okay.
None of those teams have anything on Manchester United, though. Just saying.
All right. So please don't do that. So the Tom Brady does exactly what you know happened. He, against the sport's best defense, the era's best defense, down double digits. How could he do it? And he did it. He did it. He overthrows Julian Edelman on that one pass. You think that could be a crusher. They come back. He comes back. Still drills a touchdown pass to Amendola there. They get the ball right back. Remarkable stuff by the Patriots defense to not allow Marshawn Lynch to really get rolling there.
And that was true the whole way through the game. I mean, I know Marshawn went over 100, but the first half, it was incredible. Whenever he had the ball, there were like five guys tackled him. And normally, you know, Lynch can still get through five guys occasionally, but that was really impressive. They obviously had been told by Belichick, if you Marshawn Lynch has the ball, you swarm to it and you do everything you can to bring him down.
I'd love to get Bucky Brooks on the show here because he wrote an article today about what the Pats did in the passing game. I mean, it was one of those games where I know you guys aren't video gamers, but it's like you're playing your friend in Madden and he keeps doing the same thing because he knows it's going to work every time. Right. And that's how the Pats were. Shane Vereen had like 11 or 12 catches and it was just insane that dink and dunk and the Seahawks could do nothing about it.
That was a hidden thing to me. I did not know that Shane Vereen until I checked it on my phone in the fourth quarter. Shane Vereen has double-digit catches?
Yeah, I think he had 70-something yards receiving.
I would have thought Julian Edelman had more because I thought he was at about 12 and I guess he wound up with 9, but either way, he was terrific himself there. So they stop Marshawn Lynch. And what I'm trying to look up here is while we're talking is how many total plays the Seattle offense got off. It's weird. Here we go. Isn't it bizarre that Marshawn Lynch gets 24 touches and everybody laments him not getting one more, but then Russell Wilson only throws the ball 21 times.
Tom Brady threw it 50 times.
How is it that they didn't, you know, Marshawn Lynch, doesn't it seem like, boy, if they would have run him, if somehow they could have conjured 6 more carries for Lynch, that it's their game. Obviously, if they give him 1 or 2more, they likely win at the goal line. So now you see the Patriots, improbably, Tom Brady with all the pressure in the world on him, putting them not just, at some point you start thinking, this one might go to overtime. They're going to kick, touchdown. Tom Brady does it. And I'm telling you here and now, it's what I've said many times before. I'll say it again now because we just saw it on at least American sports' biggest stage. The fourth quarter, the late stages of the fourth quarter in the Super Bowl. It's great for Chris Matthews to do what he did. It's great for Malcolm Butler to do what he did. I can barely even remember his name every time I say it, Malcolm Butler. Those are great stories. But what's the best thing in sports is when the alleged best rise in the toughest moment and does it. LeBron James, Mario Lemieux.
I mean, LeBron's had some hiccups. That's not.
Tom Brady's had a couple too.
That stuff, right. And
no,
that
LeBron's
informs
had some bad
that
hiccups.
Informs your brain. Right, of course. Peyton Manning, I don't care if you like it or not, Broncos or Colts people or Peyton Manning people, your guy has had that pressure on him and crumbled as a result of it.
This is going to turn into a Peyton Manning thing.
Yes, down. It is not. I'm telling you that this is what is to be hailed above all else.
I agree.
It's not just the gifts. And forget the whole six-round thing, and he has a chip on his shoulder for 15 years. He is clearly one of the best QBs. He is, you could make a case, the best in the sport of the era. Clearly people are talking about him because of his deeds, his team's deeds, and everything else. He's on the cusp of winning number 4, but also having 2 picks against him. You know, the second pick puts his team down 10 points.
Right.
You know, the Deflategate stink is on him. It's sort of on his shoulders to some degree. He's got, again, for another decade, the brilliant career he was having is now going to be tainted by 3 straight Super Bowl losses. I know he has Giselle, and I know he has $100 million or whatever he has. But all that pressure on his shoulders, and you can tell it matters to him. You can see it matters to him. And to pull it out was just, that to me is the greatest of dramas. Forget Chris Matthews. It's great when underdogs do things, when underdog teams do things, but when you're supposed to do it. The curse of Sposta is mighty, and he overcame it.
And if you think about what the discussion would have been this week, let's say the picks dropped at the end, or that Lynch does get the ball and they go in and score the touchdown, think about what the story would be, because of course we'd be hailing the Seahawks as a two-time winner and whatever else, but the story this week would be Tom Brady fails again, he throws two picks in a Super Bowl, and now he's lost four in a row. It would be about Deflategate, and you know what's next for Tom Brady. He's going to be the subject of this thing. So the pressure, of course, is around the Super Bowl and that specific game. But then if you pile all that other stuff on there, just think about what he might have been facing if this hadn't all come on.
Yep.
Dave, and I totally agree with you there about coming through with the pressure. I mean, it's why Michael Jordan is probably most undisputed athlete, greatest in his sport, because obviously 6-0, and the way he ended his Bulls career with that, you know, game-winning shot. However, though, to Hank's point, though, it is weird that the narrative on Brady would be totally different if the end of the game went differently, and that's something he had absolutely nothing to do with.
I get that it's
he had
the
nothing
ultimate.
To do with that. Essentially, he had nothing to do with how the game was decided.
But again, as I said a million times, it does matter if you're evaluating who the best quarterback is. It is clearly the most important position in the biggest sport. And so when you have great sports debates about whether this is how many titles you win matters, or else they should just cancel the postseason.
So, I agree. Tom Brady is the greatest ever?
Tom Brady, I said it the instant the game was over, is the greatest quarterback in the Super Bowl era. That's it. I mean, I can't really talk about. I don't care about Otto Graham. I don't know about all that, measuring him against that. But, of course, the significance
Who's your two and your three now?
The significance of the quarterback is much greater than it was 70 years ago, too. So, you know, when people hold up Otto Graham, it's Sammy Baugh or whoever. I'm not that anybody's saying Sammy Baugh is the greatest quarterback of all time anymore. But so the measuring stick is Joe Montana. And you could put him up with that. I mean, the Peyton Manning comparison is now laughable, right? I mean, that nobody's
that one's attempt that at one. This point. You know, we were debating that two, 3 years ago, Manning or Brady. At that point, that one's been put to bed.
Yeah, and there's really not anybody else you would even consider at this point, right? It's Montana or Brady.
Correct.
Sorry, but you're going Brady, Montana. Who's your three?
Well, I'd love to say Bradshaw, but as a Steeler guy, but Bradshaw, you know,
Bradshaw,
that when
you
people
were just
say,
talking about Greasy, how can you suddenly bring Bradshaw into this conversation?
There's not a comparison. Tear Bradshaw.
You're right. There's not a comparison, but there's not a comparison between Bradshaw and Montana or Brady.
All right, he went
apart
four
from
for
some
four.
Rings.
Tom Brady, I mean Terry Bradshaw went 4 for 4.
But look at the pieces around. Well, I don't want to get into Terry. But
don't tell me about pieces. Tell me.
That was one of the greatest defenses of all time.
You know what's laughable?
Who's your number three?
Anybody's got to tell me about this 21st century Patriots dynasty. And, how does it compare? Is it better than the Steelers? Please. The Steelers won 4 Super Bowls in 6 years in the most titanically stacked era of great all-time teams. In fact, I just did the top 10 list thing that the NFL Films does that airs on NFL Network. And one of their top 10s was the 10 greatest dynasties of all time. Now, I'm not going to mention where the Steelers were on this list, but I will say that what I pointed out to them, and I've pointed out in the past, is how many of these top 10 were 70s teams? They had the Cowboys in there. They had the Dolphins. They had the Raiders and the Steelers of the 70s. You could also make a case the Vikings. 40% of the top 10 were all playing
in
one decade.
And yet they won 4.
And the Steelers won 4-6. Don't tell me about the Patriots of the 21st century. Who'd they beat? The Bills? Twice? Big whoop. Tell me about the... Anyhow, I'm back to respecting the Patriots dynasty. Okay. Or Tom Brady, at least. Here, a couple other points about Brady. He got to play with Randy Moss for one season, and they came up a hair short there. But, you know, Joe Montana has Jerry Rice.
Jerry Rice, he's got probably the greatest player of all time, taking quarterbacks out. He's got Jerry Rice on his side for however many years they were together. Brady's had Brandon LaFell. And
Roger Craig.
Chad Jackson.
Right.
Julian Edelman is underrated, though.
LeGarrette Blount was the starting running back.
Well, you look at all the running backs. He had, Sammy Morris and
Antoine Smith, who was fine. But, I mean,
Lawrence Maroney. I mean, none of those guys are headed anywhere.
Roger
here.
Craig probably belongs in the Hall of Fame, right. You know? I mean, listen. To me, Gronkowski is terrific, and by the way, it does prove out the most important non-QB Jenga piece on offense this year. He was once again just about unstoppable, even for that great defense.
When you put a linebacker on him on the outside with no safety help.
Hey, listen, he had six catches, and he made some tough plays too. You know, that's not easy for a guy that gigantic chunk of man to be. I mean, he's running away from the ball in tight coverage, making some handsy grabs there, you know?
I'm going to make a prediction that of all the Jenga pieces that there are in the NFL, Gronk would be the worst at Jenga.
That's a good idea. Let's get that together. That's a good off-season thing.
Like get a Jenga contest, yeah. Jenga championship of Jenga pieces.
I love it. That could be a good one. Marshawn Lynch versus Rob Gronkowski, round one.
They played.
They did video game.
No chance that holds up. Lynch walks in the room and that whole thing crumbles.
Now, real quick, what about? So yes, do you agree with that, Handsome?
About
Tom Brady, number
yes.
one.
Yes. Oh, I mean, it's undisputed, and I think the point you were getting to there is like the pieces that he's had compared to the ones that Montana's had, and the fact that he still had the same success to me is what makes him most celebrated.
Black tie. You want to be cynical?
No, I mean, I didn't watch Montana and Bradshaw play. So, I mean, if he didn't win this, if the Seahawks scored a touchdown, we're not having this conversation. It's kind of like we're having this conversation simply because they won a fourth title. That's why. And but I understand that factors in.
He obviously just put them into a position to win the game.
It was spectacular.
That wasn't touchdown or overtime. That was you must score a touchdown here, yeah. Seahawks, or you lose to Tom Brady because he just put up two touchdowns on your mighty defense in the fourth quarter.
I also want to think that, you know, give a lot of credit to that coaching staff and Belichick, McDaniels. I would love to have Bucky Brooks again to talk about what is it they found out they could do to the Seahawks defense.
I just told you. I just divined.
Why do you need Bucky to do
it? Because Bucky breaks it down nice, man.
So do I. Know? What, you don't like the way I break it down? Handsome and I aren't doing a capable job for you?
Why don't you go do a podcast with Bucky?
Yeah. All right, well, listen. So that was – and then the final couple of plays. Oh, two more things about to Pat Carroll and Bevel on the back real quick. So they get down there, and what do? The first play is they run the wheel to Marshawn Lynch. What? What was Marshawn Lynch streaking up the left sideline? Was insane that play happens. Mm-hmm. Kudos to them.
They've done it a couple of times, though. I mean, they did it against the Packers. They did it earlier this game as well. Yeah.
But where did this come from at this critical point in the season that Marshawn Lynch is catching
suddenly,
deep ball?
Yeah.
So then they do that, and then they convert on third down. Then – Jermaine Kearse makes.
I mean,
what to say? Also, we talk about the 31-second drive at the end of the half after all the some legitimate good back and forth before that. Then the Doug Baldwin poops a football. Then there's Left Shark. Then there's the 10-point deficit. Then there's this massive rally by the Patriots in the fourth quarter, and all that is forget all of it because then Jermaine Kearse does that insanity. I mean, that was the Super Bowl with a minute left. What just happened?
But that's the crazy thing about it is I've never been somewhere, you know, where you've got that mass of people and everyone's caught up, you know, in a stadium in that crowd atmosphere environment where everyone just is going with this incredible flow, like you say, that's happened pretty much since halftime. And then this happens and there's collective confusion. Everyone's like, what just
happened?
What? That can't be.
You knew he caught it as soon as when you saw. You can always watch the receiver.
Right,
watch the receiver. They you read their body. Black Tie loves to read the body language.
That's,
you can tell Kearse knew he caught it the second
right.
he had it. Yeah,
but everyone there was like, what did we just see?
I mean, the craziness
of
like
weirder than Left Shark.
The Freeman catch that everybody's comparing it to Antonio Freeman. I always have said about that. The thing that's crazy about it is you could go outside and recreate the Eli Manning, the David Tyree mm-hmm. catch. You could do that. You could replicate it with a number of tries. You could never do the Antonio Freeman one again because it's just so fluky. The way you could do it, you know, a billion times and the ball would just never deflect in the same pattern it does to wind up like that. And same with this one. But then there's something to it with Curse doing it. I'm talking. You know what I just realized? The Patriots curse. I never did you think about it?
Yeah, of course.
Did you think of that?
I had a headline all ready to go. I mean, if that had been the touchdown, curse. The game, the curse. Cursed. The curse of the Patriots.
I don't know why that
it was all ready to go.
I'm not as clever as you, apparently.
But then it had to be the butler did it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Not as clever. But anyway, so
sorry, Dave.
Then Butler puts his hand on that ball. You talk about the Tom Brady legacy thing, black tie. How about Malcolm Butler would have been like, if you wouldn't have touched that ball, you know, we win the Super Bowl, fella. Although maybe Curse was still what I caught. But anyway, that as the ball's going to the ground, it wasn't complete fluke because Curse kind of like kicks at the ball to keep it up in the air.
Yep.
It was crazy what happened.
It was insane. And then, you know,
I just couldn't stop. And I'm in a Patriots section, including with my chum. The ashen. I can't believe this is going to happen again. We're going to lose on another insane thing. Like, what? I can't take it. It was so sorrowful. It was just just so grim. And then clearly, very quickly, we don't have to debate it. I get the one thing I'll say about that, about the sequence of plays there. Marshawn Lynch gets it inside the one there, and I am immediately saying out loud to those around me, well, just call the timeout now, Belichick. And I what is he doing? What is he doing? And the anxious Patriots fans around me, call timeout, what are you doing? And as everybody's screaming, oh, he's blown this one. Belichick is he's frozen. What is he doing?
I literally thought he was frozen. I'm like,
why is he
are you
doing
not
that? And then in the blink of an eye, the ball's intercepted, and it's bedlam. The relief and the that's really what it is. If you're a Patriots fan, if you're Tom Brady, yes, euphoria is great, but and the exhilaration comes from that moment of glee isn't relief. It's glee. Our guy just picked it off, but then that wave of the predominant emotion, if you're Tom Brady and the Patriots, is, oh, thank God it didn't happen to us. Thank God for once we survived this one.
And that's what a defensive stand will do for you at the end of a Super Bowl or any big game, I guess, is like rather than being the euphoria of we did it ourselves, we made it happen. It's almost like we stopped them. Thank God.
Yeah, I think though that Belichick. Is as time goes by, you watch. Hear me now, believe me later. As time goes by, in the next 24 hours, over the next week, and by the time next season starts, Belichick will be given too much credit on this. He knew that Carroll knew, but there is something about the fact that he didn't call timeout. I don't think it was confidence in like my defense has this. I'm ready to roll. But I think that there was. I think whatever Belichick was doing, and so maybe at some point he'll address that he knew that the Seahawks probably expected him to take a timeout, but I bet you the Seahawks did think, well, they're going to call timeout here, and the clock is moving, and so they have to hustle. I get the throw the ball thing. I do get it.
But then if that was the case, surely, if they were like, we're expecting a timeout, oh, wait, we've got to call a play. The easier thing to do would be to call the run rather than be like, okay, let's call this pass that we've got.
Well, because the clock is moving, and so they're thinking. So where they go wrong is it's really overthinking it. Is that they're looking at the clock ticking down, and I'm sure they're thinking, well, the Patriots need to stop the clock. They're not going to let us just run this thing down. And I bet you they found themselves a little surprised by that. But they're also thinking.
If that's the case, then you run it because that's going to keep the ball. Whatever happens.
I agree, but in their brains, they're thinking, well, we have three cracks at this, which is really dumb and not as aggressive. What's the crazy thing is, it's not the going against their strength, going away from Lynch. It's that Pete Carroll is so aggressive and confident always. His whole thing is, and in fact, after the game, he said, I never considered that Russell might throw an interception there. It's just not my train of thought. And I believe that he's that sort of super optimistic sort of guy, positive.
Why would you? I mean, through the day, he'd been pretty efficient with his passing. It wasn't like he'd been wild like he had at the start of the NFC Championship.
No, where his optimism inexplicably goes away is, why do you need three downs? You're not going to need three downs here. But he's thinking, I need to have all our plays. I don't want to leave any bullets in the holster here. But If he just runs it, there's no way they're stopping Marshawn Lynch twice. Run it on second down, call the timeout. Then on third down, you could throw it, and then you still have.
Sure.
And think about this. Great game, yes, but imagine if it goes like this. They stuff the run on second down. They call timeout with 20 seconds left. Mm-hmm. Third down, they drop back. They pass. It's incomplete. What if it's fourth and goal with 10 seconds left in the game?
The Super Bowl.
Down four. That's the best ever. Yep. Well, it is.
I've played that in my garden before.
Isn't it? Yeah, against your boy. And somehow he scored on you, yeah. And he's five. That was weird. Real quick, best Super Bowl ever? Where do you rank it?
Wait, before we get to that, guys, I think everyone's glossing over this. Blaming Pete Carroll, the play call, all that stuff. It's on Russell there, man. You can't throw an interception. Malcolm Butler made a great play.
Yeah, well, that's the point. And he jumps. I'm sorry it's not Bucky here to tell you this, but he could not have played that play. He couldn't have played it better.
But that's also on Russell.
He jumped it before Russell had even got to.
And we praise Russell. We praise Russell a lot for his next, you know, awareness and knowing where the defense is. He doesn't throw a lot of picks again, other than the NFC Championship game. But that's where Malcolm Butler jumped that play from the very start. Russell either has to throw that lower.
He can't see that happen. I beat up a quarterback about things. I don't think that's such tight quarters. He's dropping back to drill it.
You just do it on feel. You're like three steps, boom, it's out.
I totally agree, and I'm not saying, hey, this is all on Russell's head. I am just saying that people are giving a little bit too much leeway. If this was Peyton Manning that threw that pass or Tony Romo,
But the window for that kind of pass is always going to be small. The gap is going to be nothing. It's a short pass. To be able to for him to get to that step where it's a three-step drop and you let go of it as soon as you get back there, there's no way that he can make the decision to actually, I don't think that thing's there, because it never ever going to look like it's there. You just got to hammer it in there and make sure you get it in.
And Ricardo Luckett, who we spoke to media today, by the way.
Yeah, he was a fun guy.
He's been at three straight Super Bowls. He has a chance to win one. He gets blown up on that play.
The guy who is being unfairly, even in passing, knocked at all is Ricardo Luckett. He didn't fight through. We didn't see him.
He got absolutely blown up. He's going full speed.
He's looking back to the ball. He's going to fight through. He doesn't know that the guy's there until he collides.
We watched the replay a couple of times before we came up here, and he's holding his hands down like he's expecting it to come to him. Like, you got to attack that. You got to go out there and grab
it. It's
ball
all within the space of 5 yards, though. Right. It's not like there's any time to pull the ball down if you're Russell Wilson or anybody else there.
Butler made a great play.
It did.
Bevel made a bad call.
Would you say the Butler did it?
Yes.
That's a great. Butler made a great play.
Well, of course
play.
You're going to use it, but it's not like that's a great line. It's a fine line. You have to use it if you're the headline writer, as you are.
Yeah. What else have you got? Malcolm in the middle of a pass?
That's pretty good. Yeah, I almost used that one better. I like that one better.
Butler makes a great play. Bevel makes a terrible call. Pete Carroll takes the rap.
If you are going to pass that ball in that situation, why not go a little read option there? And if Russell, like, read option, triple option. And, I mean, it's what they usually do,
of course they should have run. What else are you going to say? There's nothing else to say on the subject. The thing I think is, though, with the exception of the clock ticking down against them, and maybe they thought, oh, well, the Patriots aren't going to stop this. I don't think they got caught with their pants down. I think it's the opposite. I think they overthought it and thought, what is the way to use the next three plays? They were too lucid for their own good. If you're just, go, give it to 24 again. They're not going to stop that. Plus, we have a timeout. Plus, they did waste two timeouts, too, on that possession. They didn't need to burn both those. If they don't burn one of those two timeouts earlier in that very brief drive, they would have called timeout there, or they would have run Lynch there and called timeout.
But going back to your Belichick,
is there any chance? Is there any chance the Patriots would have stopped Marshawn Lynch twice from the half yard line?
The numbers say that he's not that great in that situation. But granted, that's numbers.
Yeah.
It's like the numbers say that you never throw an interception in the one yard line.
One of five inside the 1 yard line this season. But I throw that out. I mean, this is the Super Bowl. This is the Super Bowl.
The game was over to me. They're gonna score here unless they strip Marshawn Lynch.
And I think
if they run some sort of read option at the goal line. How would you possibly keep Russell Wilson away from the edge? It's funny. We were asking guys that in the preceding couple of weeks here. We asked who's scarier with the Super Bowl. It's funny. We did ask Calais Campbell that very question. Super Bowl's on the line. Who is scarier coming at you in space, Lynch or Russell Wilson? I mean, they really could have done that to Jamie Collins or Ninkovic or somebody else. I mean, I do that or twice, the game is over. Or they win the Super Bowl.
On that passing play, they could have spread them out like they did at the end of the first half and then have Russell run it himself. I mean, from a yard out, Brady makes a living from fourth and ones. Just
and by the way, through. Of course that's the case. They should have run the ball there, but I just don't know that we need to belabor that. And because
I mean,
the thing that bums me
out
is that has become, in since the game's ended, all anybody's talking about are those two plays, and that's the overarching point. This was the greatest Super Bowl of all time.
I think you got to duck at a few points because it ends on a play that almost in a way shouldn't have happened. You know,
iconic,
it's almost like a bad
iconic
play.
Event.
It's but, more bad play
also,
than it is.
I think, though, it's different than in other eras because of social media. Everybody has a voice and it gains momentum, and it's one of those things that it even the smallest voice on Twitter or Facebook or whatever else has more weight than it did 20 years ago. And once you see your chum say that was a mistake, human beings are more susceptible to what others think than they want to believe they are.
Groupthink.
And as soon as you start seeing other people saying, oh, that was a mistake, people pile on and it gets to be that sort of snowball running downhill. And, you know, in generations gone by, there are other plays that are questionable. There are questionable play calls in sports history, in football history, that aren't just collectively decided, you imbecile, and we hate you now, and you blew it, and instead of celebrating what was, as I keep saying, the best Super Bowl I've ever seen. Handsome, how say you? Best one ever? Go ahead.
I don't know if it's necessary. The best. I love the game. I don't think – I like Steelers-Cardinals more.
Well, I like it better.
I'll tell you why.
I like that one
better,
too.
It had that finish, but it had – obviously had the James Harrison interception. It had the Larry Fitzgerald touchdown.
That's what it had. It had those three plays. That's that game. It's those three – the rest of the game isn't a fascinating – back and forth chess match.
Well,
this
it kind
one.
Of is in that it was, you know, this game, and you know, I can tell you from NFL.com, we put up polls on NFL.com. Who do you think is going to win it? Going into the game, it was 50-50. It was exactly 50% of people who voted on it, and this is hundreds of thousands of fans thought that the Seahawks were going to win. 50% thought that the Patriots were going to win. So I mean, it was a split game. That Steelers Cardinals one was expected to be much more one-sided than that. So that's why it was exciting, because it was like, wait, these guys have actually shown up to play.
Well, like I say, James Harrison's – and make clear
putting
again, obviously,
I
was thrilled by the result of that game. Also, the terror that talk about the fear of Sposta. When Larry Fitzgerald scored, like, we're going to lose to the Arizona Cardinals are going to beat the Steelers.
Who are even in a Super Bowl.
The Cardinals are going to beat the Steelers in the Super Bowl. That was a grim few minutes. Although, I did have a weird that night, watching that game, I had a weird sense of calm wash over me. As soon as they scored that touchdown, I don't know why, I knew Roethlisberger was going to – I don't know what it was. I am a ball of nerves. For some reason, I just – all of a sudden, I was able to – very zen-like. I knew 7 was going to do it, and so he did. But that's not what we're talking about.
Apparently, it is.
25 Bills and Giants.
But that
wasn't
– that
was
not
– that was a great game.
It was a great game, but it wasn't – it didn't have any – I mean, apart from that, there wasn't something that you're like, wow, look at that happen.
Apart from Norwood?
Yeah.
Well, you had the Mark Ingram run. Yeah. The safety by Bruce Smith on Jeff Hostetler. People also hold up Rams-Titans. That was not that good.
That was all about the end.
That was a garbage game. The last 5 minutes were terrific. But the Steelers game was James Harrison in a mediocre first half, and then the last 5 minutes were wonderful stuff. This one, to me, like I say, it's the back and forth and back and forth, and the who is Chris Matthews of element and the – this guy is the generation's quarterback, and in his toughest spot he could possibly be dropped into. If he does this, then saying that at the time, well, down 10 and going into the fourth quarter against that Seahawks defense, let's see him do this. If he's the best ever, let's see him prove it here. This is the stage to do it. And for him to do it, it's remarkable stuff. I'm not a Patriots guy in the least, and in fact, I'm someone who has enjoyed watching the Patriots lose in the past for the pain they've caused my team. But not on this day. I respect the ruggedly handsome Tom Brady. Black Tie, you're shaking your head.
Well, I mean, he's not. He gets too much props for being handsome as well.
You know what? Oh,
really?
Yeah, he really does.
I asked Jimmy Garoppolo. You saw at Media Day, too. I asked Jimmy Garoppolo, cool. Vince Wilfork, and Rob Gronkowski who the more handsome Patriots QB was. They went with Tom Brady, except for Vince Wilfork, who refused to answer the question. And then we'll wrap it up. You know what I don't like? Let's try to turn the page. 2014's football season is over. As sports fans, let's get over a few things. Let's stop. If I pick against your team, or Handsome Hank or Black Tie or anyone else you hear on the show says I think the other team's going to win, it doesn't mean we hate your team. Nobody hates your team.
The Jets.
Can we get off?
If I pick against,
I always say people say you hate the Raiders. I've been accused of hating every team in the NFL, including the Steelers, right. which is ridiculous.
No, but I really genuinely do hate the Jets.
Do you?
If you ever hear me pick against the Jets, partly because I think that the Jets are terrible and they're going to lose the game, but also just because I hate them.
The only thing that's really making me – I really hate no NFL team because I just don't. I mean, I hope certain teams don't win because of legacy and what it means. And, you know, I'm keeping track. The Steelers have six. So a lot of Steelers fans are saying, why would you want the Patriots to get the four and join that exclusive club? Because the exclusive club also is the two-in-a-row club. I don't want the Seahawks joining that club. How about that? Right. is my retort. And also, by the way, how about this as a little tidbit if it makes you feel better? The Patriots are not – no one can ever call the Patriots and their four comparable to the San Francisco 49ers or the Pittsburgh Steelers. Why? Because those teams don't have stinks on them. I don't care what you say. The stain. There's a stain. Whether you like it or not, Al Roker talked about it. So people think that. That's not me saying it. I'm saying – people who have no business talking about it have decided that this is the story of the Patriots. So that's what you have to hang your hat on, Steelers and 49ers fans. But the other thing, vapid cynicism. Let's get rid of this vapid. As soon as I tweet out right after the game, Tom Brady, best quarterback of all time, Super Bowl 49, best Super Bowl of all time. I start these dopes, these vapid cynics tell me, anybody who types is a pain in the tuchus anyway. But I think you're rushing to ever hear the name Joe Montana. You're drunk. Hey, listen.
That was my tweet.
And you were right. No, the rush? It's the opposite of what it used to be. You know, like the old curmudgeon is the one who's supposed to tell you, like, oh, I've seen more than you have, young fella. Let me tell you something. Now it's the like the 17-year-old kid who's like, hey. I don't think you listen.
Chuck, it just shows you're so popular that you have such a wide range of reactions to your opinions. That's all it is.
Don't patronize me. I won't have that just because I ripped my pants. I gotta get.
That's my favorite moment of Super Bowl week.
I gotta get to the gym.
You already do.
Oh, and the last thing. Oh, that's what we have to do.
Leave
very
the
quickly.
Cheesecake alone.
Before we wrap it up, real quick, on my flight yesterday morning. Monday morning, leaving the airport, star-studded. I love playing this
game. Was it? Who was on the?
It was Black Tie. I said it was so star-studded that Black Tie, if the plane didn't make it, if it went down, that Black Tie's name would never even be mentioned.
Really?
In the newspaper. It would never come up. Right? I don't think my name comes up.
Well, let's say who was on the plane.
I don't know who's on there.
The entire Roots. The whole band. The
okay,
Roots.
That's good.
Well, not a band, but go on.
What do you call them?
The group. Yeah. This is a big difference.
They're not a band.
Not a band. J.B. Smoove, the very funny J.B. Smoove. Anthony Anderson, who's in Blackish and has been in a bunch of different things. And Heath Evans.
Right. He also wouldn't have made the list.
He's a Super Bowl champ. Mark Sessler of Around the NFL.
Okay.
Black Tie and myself.
I tell you what, though.
What order do they get listed in the newspaper? Go.
The Roots.
They're all dead. We're all dead. Among the victims.
The Roots and 15 other casualties. No one else gets name checked.
J.B. Smoove wouldn't get a name drop.
Maybe.
I go Anthony Anderson.
I think Anthony Anderson is still.
The Roots. I'll go
Heath. No. The Roots first. Be Anthony Anderson, star of Blackish, and
I'll
The
go
Departed.
Anthony
He was in The Departed, wasn't he?
I believe so. He's been, I mean, he's been in a bunch of things.
I know, but The Roots still, because yeah. they're on The Tonight Show.
Yeah,
they
I
would
know,
get
still.
The, they would be the first one, right? Then yeah, J.B. Smoove of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm.
Then Mark Sessler.
No, I see Heath Evans gets mentioned.
No, then Heath Evans.
Because they're coming back from the Super Bowl,
then
former
Dave
Pat.
Then Heath Evans. Then Dave
I'm ahead of Sessler?
Yeah.
And Black Tie, does he get mentioned?
No.
I'm not.
Why would he get mentioned?
I'm not on any plane that's going down.
He's the producer of all the NFL media.
He's
going
to parachute.
That's how I roll.
All right, so that's that. Enough. How long did we go here, Black Tie?
About a good hour and 25. Zedra's.
I don't mind. I'm not going to apologize.
That's fine. Would Bucky? Have we covered everything? Because it kind of feels like a challenge. What you said, like, oh, Bucky would have done.
Well, I would love to get the other side of the conversation.
You said you would love Black. You said you would love Bucky to be in here to break down the X's and O's.
Yeah, who possibly could have booked him?
The first time you mentioned.
Well, I tried.
The first time you mentioned him, I mentioned the play that the Seahawks ran with the stacking, with the stacked formation that they ran at the end of the first half. You said, "Oh yeah, Bucky was talking about that." That was the first I brought it up. What base didn't I cover for you, Black Tie?
Just saying.
Did we talk enough about the Seahawks this time?
No, this is a good conversation. Like again, I know I was, you know, not a very good game to experience at the very end of it, but it was a fun game. Great game. Much props to the Pats. I always – not the biggest Pats fan because I feel like they get too much credit for their dynasty because they hadn't won anything for so long and being in a weak division, but much props to them. They came through in Tom Brady. Great body language moment to start the game.
I think if our listeners have got this far with us and if there's something we could have done, tweet at producer Black Tie. That's right. No, producer TD, at producer TD, and let him know what we should have had in the podcast.
Yeah, where did we fail you?
And I'll give you a hint.
Aside from
less Black Tie might have been one of the answers.
Aside from the Seahawks fans letting me know that I hate them again.
Right.
You hate us. You didn't give us enough credit.
The 12's on my side, guys.
Deserving to win that game.
I'll be fine.
All right. So listen, it was a gay time, Black Tie. Now we have to get to work on cutting up those red carpet little interviews we did. We did some gangbusters work there, but great work all last week by you on Radio Row, dealing with around the NFL and move the sticks. Mo Damashek, Coach's show. Mo Damashek loved it. Caught up with him.
I met
Hank,
Mo Damashek.
He's the best.
That was terrific.
I realize I'm a huge fan of the Damasheks.
Yes.
Except Dave, you know. Football Baby is awesome. Yep. Mo's awesome. I haven't met
Dr.
Damashek.
We should do a Damashek power ranking.
I agree.
I love it. All right, so listen. What are we doing? Where do we go from here now? We have no football to talk about.
We can just speculate recklessly for the next 6 months.
Woohoo! We do have a lot to talk about. There are some great storylines, and that's what I will say. That's
I did meet up with your boy, Michael Smith. ESPN's Michael Smith. Had a little conversation because listeners that don't know, numbers never lie. You guys had a little Twitter beef way back in the day.
Numbers never lie, but that show never shows anymore.
No, because they have their podcast and now their show. His and hers.
A TV show now. They changed it. Anyway, we can hear about that. But more importantly, what we have to talk about is going forward. There's some fascinating sort of, you know, we like to play the what if game. There's some big.
Oh, you do.
Looking forward about what if might be. But like, what if Peyton Manning comes back? What's that team going to be like? What if Peyton Manning doesn't come back? What's that Denver Broncos team going to be?
He's coming back.
I think so too, but I mean what the state of that team's going to be with Demaryius Thomas or Julius Thomas very likely moving on. There are a whole bunch of questions like that are intriguing stuff. What are the New York Giants going to be? How the NFC East next year is suddenly fascinating as far as I'm concerned. You can pour over the NFL and it's really fun, like Handsome says, right now before any of the pieces are put into place to just recklessly speculate about what's going to be.
One last question.
I miss football. It's
one
over.
Last question. 2015 Super Bowl matchup is going to be
the Pittsburgh Steelers 33, the Dallas Cowboys 27. That's how it has to be for Super Bowl 50. That's the only result that would be acceptable. Right, Handsome?
Yeah.
They've played each other three times prior. They have to play once more in Super Bowl 50, the golden anniversary.
That would be terrific.
Golden anniversary won by the black and gold. The black and golden anniversary is what it will be called. The Steelers on the golden anniversary will hoist the silver trophy high above their heads.
I think
Roethlisberger will have
trophy.
Number three.
Gold trophy for 50.
Is that true?
I think I heard
breaking
that.
News?
Really?
I don't know if I'm breaking any news there.
All right. Mm. Wow, that's exciting stuff.
The logo, but that is, the logo is definitely 50.
My legitimate pick, and yeah, I will say this, and we'll get into it deeper, and I imagine outside of Mo Damashek, there are about four people listening at this point, so we can recover this at the top of the next one. But the next one is our handsome. Please pay attention.
Sorry, I am paying attention. I'm also reading a story about Gronk, who apparently last night went out in Los Angeles after appearing on the Jimmy Kimmel show and appears to have gone home with three blondes and his pants ripped from a little similar to your red carpet.
See?
Error.
Running good company. But next show is our pick show for 2015. Let's be the first ones out there to make our 2015 predictions.
Okay.
Legitimately, though, I really feel, and I've said it before, the Steelers and the Colts. I mean, really. That's
Steelers and Cowboys?
Maybe the Patriots.
No, I'm saying Colts, AFC.
I'm saying AFC's teams to beat, it, I feel, are those. I mean, I guess the
I don't think
you're wrong.
I think you're wrong on the Colts.
Really wrong on
the Colts. The Colts are going to be a team that gets to the playoffs every year for the next decade and really doesn't get a whole lot further than that.
And the NFC side, boy, some teams do bounce back, but this is a crusher. You know, this was a bad one. Sort of how I would think it's bad for the Packers. So the two best teams that played each other suffered what would be emotionally debilitating losses, you would think.
Every team in the NFC that dealt a team in one round a bad loss, they went on to face an even worse defeat in the next round.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know what? I still hold up that Packers one as worse.
No.
I would still rather, this
is sort of Super Bowl, though. Like, this was right there, 0.5 yards away. I think this is worse than a Packers loss.
Both of those teams are going to be fine.
I don't think so. I still say that Packers one was worse. I'd rather be on the Seahawks than on the Packers.
Like, you're that close to the Super Bowl. Like, you don't think this is the one that sticks with you the rest of your career? Because the Packers, even if they do win.
I think the Packers one will stick with them for the rest of their career.
Because even if the Packers do win, there's no guarantee they're winning the Super Bowl when they play.
That's absolutely right. But there was no. The Packers were way out ahead. It was in the bag. They let it go.
We have plenty to talk about. This is exciting. We have so much to talk about.
Let's save it for next
time. It's just February. Look at this. How are we, you know, we don't have a...
We could podcast from now until the start of the season.
5 months isn't nearly enough for us. 5 months to recklessly speculate won't be nearly enough. I'm feeling confident about it already. I hope you'll stick around with us throughout the month of February, all through spring and summer, as we continue to talk about the beloved game of pro football, and maybe more importantly, the rugged game called life.
Let's do that instead.
What we'll do?
Talk some Game of Thrones.
April. I just watched a new trailer.
Oh, George R. R. Martin was at the game. I think.
All right, enough. Can we move? Can we end this show, and we'll talk about all of it later? All right. So that's that. Thanks to Handsome Hank. Thanks to Black Tie. We'll be back with more.
Shout out Z Drizzle back here.
I see him back there.
I
don't call him Z Drizzle.
No one else apart from you.
I know.
Fouts.
I call him Fouts back there. There he is. Fouts tie. But thanks to Fouts. And congratulations on Eli Manning being the kryptonite to
He's happy about Patriots. That, though. Yeah, he was going for Seahawks, too,
like
but
that.
He's happy about
I'd
that.
I'd like to be that kind. I'd like to have that that chip, you know. Yeah. Tom Brady is. If I were you, Fouts tie, I would be singing Eli. Songs about – You know what? As a matter of fact, you know, that is a great little tidbit. You know who should feel great about themselves right now, along with the Chargers, who beat every – they always beat the team that loses in the Super Bowl. The New York Giants, because they have played such a key role in defining NFL history beyond just their winning some Super Bowls. They stopped the best team to not win a Super Bowl, the Joe Montana, 1989? That was the 89? Mm-hmm. Niners,
They also stopped the Bears the season after they won their Super Bowl.
Yeah, that was a weird. Because Jim McMahon was out, but because they heard Jim McMahon did the Packers, but yeah, the Giants knock out the 49ers, who certainly would have won the Super. Well, would they? No, is that 89? That's the year the Giants go, and then they beat. So that's 90.
They
beat the Scott Norwood team. Yeah, because 89 is when they house the Broncos in the Superdome. But either way, so that one. And now the Patriots could have 6 in a row.
Yep.
They could have 6. They could be 6-6, and then there would be no conversation. Right. I wouldn't be able to brag on the Steelers as the best ever.
This conversation would have ended 3 years ago when they won in 2011 if they won.
And the Steelers, or at least Bill Cowher, wanted to draft – Philip Rivers, not Ben Roethlisberger. But, of course, you guys go and get Eli Manning from San Diego. Oh, it's no wonder I like to do the what-if game. All right, enough. Congratulations to – I think if you've learned anything, congratulations to the New York Giants. That's really the
Giants fans, in my experience, never have a hard time feeling good about themselves. So.
Yeah, well, they have the Jets to laugh at all, so they always feel good about
it. We all have that.
I'll get better, guys.
All right, enough's enough. We'll be back with more Who in Applesauce and retro speculation later on. In the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.